And welcome back to Unicorns and Hand Grenades, everyone. My name's Jax, and my co-host Kim and I are rapt that you've chosen to join us in this series of real and raw conversations that we'll be having with each other and our guests, where we explore the nature of being human and embracing life in all of its brutal magnificence. We hope you enjoy this ride as much as we enjoy bringing it to you. So let's get into the conversation. Hey everyone, it's Jax here, and I am sitting around the mic with two incredibly awesome humans. And I know every time we record, we say I'm excited because I'm an excitable person, and I'm just owning that. So I'm super excited tonight to have a conversation with obviously my buddy Kim. Hey Kim, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good.
Excellent. A little bit croaky, so sounding a little bit 0800 husky.
Yes.
Have a week off. Yep.
And a little bit of a spicy one. Yeah.
She likes to sell herself up, does our Kim, Kate. And Kate, welcome to the conversation as well. Nice to see you.
Thanks very much, Jax.
Thanks for joining us. And we're going to do that really awkward thing where I sit here and say wonderful things about you, and you just have to politely practice what you share with everyone else about gracefully accepting my reflection of you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So listeners, for those of you that don't know Kate, Kate is a speaker, author, thought leader, and change maker. She is a faculty member of Thought Leaders Business School, founder and creative director of Blacksmith, and she's someone who's deeply passionate about putting the tricky business of being fully human right at the center of how we live, lead, and work. And that's something that we are going to dive deep into and understand a little bit more around as the conversation evolves. So we've got a little bit of an idea of some of the spark points that we'd like to ignite your cells and get them crackling around. But first off, I'm going to do what I always do. Tag, you're it, Kim.
Hi, Kate.
Hi.
So that's quite the resume, quite the introduction.
I loved
hearing what Jax was explaining there. And I just, the piece about being human and putting that at the center of not just living, but leading and working, which I think sometimes is the piece that gets missed. So there's so much that we want to cover tonight, but I'd love to start with you telling us a little bit about what brought you to this point, maybe some of the critical experiences that you had that you know, crafted the person that you are today.
Well, crikey, I mean, there's a 53-year show reel at this point. So this is the thing, the longer one lives this life, the more there is to look at and review. I think there is, as you were speaking, Kim, there is a moment that comes immediately to mind when I was, I think it was about 2001, and I was working in an internal HR role in one of the big corporate law firms. And it was the first time I had a conversation with someone about the fact that workplaces were fundamentally inhuman. You know, that we'd created these places of work and ways of working. You know, this is 21 years ago, that weren't really designed to get the best out of people. And that had come off the back of an altercation with one of the partners where he'd thrown a phone across his office, because you had offices back then, at someone. And when I had been asked to go and speak to him about it, because obviously that wasn't okay, his words were, "My secretary is broken, get me a new one." And so we had a conversation then about the fact that, you know, about the secretaries and people too, and but also about what was going on for him, that he had thought that that was an okay way to behave. And he said, "Well, I didn't think, I just did it." So it was this conversation about, well, what is it about the way you're working that's meaning this is the way, the only way you felt you could or did respond in that moment, and how might we think about, you know, that was the first time I had a conversation with someone about the fact that it's just broken. You know, and it's funny to think it's 21 years on, and the idea of the idea of and the use of the word human in the workplace over and above human resources, you know, HR, watch out, HR are on the floor, HR are coming, someone's for the swing, you know, other than that, it's only really recently that it's become a part of the common conversation about leadership and about workplaces, which is, it's been a long time coming. And I think it's been a long time coming for me too. So that's one of the experiences that comes to mind when you ask that question.
It's crazy, isn't it? Because I'm an HR practitioner. I work in that field. And the fact that we're only talking about vulnerability and, you know, authenticity and bringing your whole self to work and all of that kind of stuff more recently, when we're, like you said, trying to get the best out of people in order to, you know, among other things, drive success of a business, is quite mind-blowing. And then people start looking at you strangely when you talk in these terms that are a little bit, I don't know, left field. Yeah, we're only just catching up after 21 years, you know, as per your reflection.
Yeah, and I think one of the important things to remember is an idea travels faster than the capacity to make good on it, right? Mm. So we talk about ideas, people get lit up by an idea and they go, oh, yes, or particularly if it's got lovely sticky language, people get attached to it and they start using it a lot without fully understanding what it might mean and what it might ask of people. I think this is one of the challenges that we have with the idea of, you know, being better humans is we, even in science, you know, I wanted to be a doctor when I grew up. I was 10 years old when a well-meaning adult said to me, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, a pathologist. My dad loves to retell the story. He was present and he said the adult in question didn't know quite how to respond to that other than to say, what's a pathologist? Because they didn't know. You know, so this idea of understanding why we suffer, be it from disease or in the mind, existential suffering, so, you know, this, which is where most of the suffering is, right? This idea that you can, say, put vulnerability up as a thing and say, now we're going to be vulnerable, we're going to train you to be vulnerable, talking about bringing our whole selves to work. Nobody wants that, to be honest. People might put it in values, but we don't even know who we are. We're an unfolding creation. So what does whole self mean? And are we up for it? And how the hell are we creating environments where other people are up for it? Because being human is messy, you know, and we don't actually need that at work. So it's a controversial thing at the same time that I'm saying I'm about fully human development. I think we have to be careful with some of the things that are now being thrown around about authenticity and, you know, be your whole self. It's like, let's talk about what that actually means, because it might not be what you think and it might create more problems than not. So what do we actually mean? Do you know why some of those things? I think the shorthand sounds sexy. Everyone's getting on it. Yes, that's what we want. And it's the latest thing, particularly now we've got added complexity of work from anywhere, anytime. It's just such a fascinating field to be part of. Like we are never going to run out of work to do.
We aren't. And when you were talking about that it's not easy and that idea of we can speak a concept and get a concept and then it's a little bit like time travel. We have to catch up. We have to catch up to it in the future and then figure out what it looks like and understand it on the way, and that's messy. But being fully human's fucking messy, excuse my language.
Oh, no, swear. I'm a big swearer, so I'm just going to say it.
Oh,
drop
yeah.
The F-bombs.
Yeah, yeah. And you feel free to fire them away too. But I think, so if I just start to unravel, because I'm an out loud thinker, if I start to unravel what was playing out for me when you were speaking, it's because I'm passionate like you about having fully human leaders in the workplace. But I think about my life 4 years ago before my hand grenade moment. You had said to me then, fully human, full stop, I would have gone, what are you talking about? And then fully human in the workplace, bring your whole self. That would have just made me look at you like you were sideways cuckoo woo woo. And that would have been no reflection on you or these conversations. It was me and my journey. And then I've had the beautiful gift, as has Kim, and we use the term gift compassionately, of having our worlds blown up to the core. But that's what made me realize what the work of being fully human is and how it isn't easy. It's about going deep. It's about understanding how we're wired, and we're all wired so differently. What adds to that experience? And man, I think back to that conversation you had with the gentleman who threw the phone, who said the secretary was broken. Instead of you reading him the HR Riot Act, which probably was the way that day, you started investigating what was the crack in his humanity and how was that slightly broken, and helping him in a conversation from the very beginning how to weave it back together. So that was groundbreaking then. And this concept of becoming fully human for me is about actually moving through the messiness and navigating transition and change. But we're never taught to do that. No one gives us the friggin' handbook, and no one teaches us the process that sits behind all of that. So I would love for you to share a little bit around your thoughts on starting the transition to fully embracing yourself, to flying your freak flag, to accepting just be true, all of those beautiful things that we're going to let listeners know about.
Yeah. So I think for me, the fully human approach integrates a number of disciplines, if you like, and threads. So it includes what one might expect in terms of psychology and neuroscience, but it also includes anthropology, it includes philosophy, it includes sociology. You know, we have to, it really does, it is a journey back to remembering who we are, not just as individuals, but as human beings. It's like I was saying about, you know, wanting to be a doctor when I was a kid, even with all the advances in modern science. I mean, look, we look at, so decoding the human genome, all right, that was a huge enterprise. And it's been, what, 22, 23 years since that was first decoded. You know, billions, four little things in billions of combinations, right? And it cost like $100 million the first time around and took a couple of years. And now it can be done in 2 days for $500. So, but we still don't know what 95% of our DNA does. We don't know why it's there. See, what we don't know about being human is a lot. And there is so much that we can learn from what is available. So this is part of where I start with people, is like understand, become deeply curious about what it is to be human in general, as a human being. Like, how do these things actually work? Our bodies, our minds, our social relationships, some of the deeply wired, you know, from an anthropological psych perspective, things that are just wired in that mean we behave the way we do, even when we don't know why. You can guarantee it's predictable. Human beings are super predictable most of the time. You know, so become deeply curious about what it is to be human, and then become deeply curious about your own humanity, your own experience, what it is that you have decided makes you you right now, because it's just a story in lots of ways. We are a social construction, partly of our own doing and partly in terms of society and stereotypes and the people around us who shaped us as we grow up, the things we've decided to take on in terms of our identity. You know, even when we're remembering things like the story I shared with you, that's a remembering of a remembering of a remembering. It's not actually what, you know, when I play it in my mind, it's not what actually happened, I'm sure. So I think this process of beginning the work for yourself I think of it as an adventure, I really do. And it's an excavation in the beginning. You think of yourself as kind of being on an archaeological dig and looking around. And we're talking about going back 50,000 years in time, you know, it's kind of where I look back. Even longer, if we're going to look at it from a pure anthropological perspective. But you know, inside the last 50,000 years, human beings as we know it have existed in some way, shape or form. You know, they've made instruments, they've cared for each other, we've mended broken bones, we've developed language, agricultural revolution, all of these sorts of things have happened. So get interested in that and then get super interested in yourself, but not in a narcissistic kind of way. And become, like I talk with people about becoming David Attenborough of like the people around you. Almost like you're hiding in the, you know, gorillas in the mist, except it's human beings in your office or your home or a restaurant. And it's just like becoming endlessly fascinated with our own experience and what's going on around us so that we can learn and grow and change. And one of my sayings is not let who we're being get in the way of who we can become.
I love that because we're creating from moment to moment to moment. Like you said, we're creating the memory. It has a different twist, feel and flavor every single time. We're in the present and we're creating the future. And that's super exciting when you have started that excavation of yourself and exploration because you're looking at it through curiosity and you're understanding your automatic default patterns. So you don't drop into them. You can observe them, and it's this beautiful alchemy of what you know, what you observe, what you hope. And I think that was the biggest shift for me in my journey. I wasn't curious about anything because I had no space in my life. And so I think what you're talking about, at the purest level, people have to have a little crack and start to create a little space to get curious. Because so many of us prior to COVID had designed lives that we could hardly catch our breath in and every moment was filled, which was a great hiding place to be. But Kim, what's coming up for you? Because I know this just lights you up as well, this kind of conversation.
Yeah, and as we always do, we look at, you know, some of the things that you've said have just triggered my own thinking about the experience that I've had over the last few years. And this notion of being endlessly fascinated by our own experience. And to your point, Jax, yeah, there was probably an element of autopilot for me prior to the unraveling of my life. And that came in the form of like a lot of lost parents in the same year and all of that kind of thing. And by, because of that shift, and then I was thinking about don't let who you are now get in the way of who you can become, because I was trying to somehow make sense of and understand what had happened and the reactions that were going on in my body, and maybe the way that I actually was handling it better than I thought I was going to, and it didn't quite run how I'd planned in my head because grief never does. I had extraordinary growth, and it was hard, painful, fought for growth, but it was the me that I was then and the me that I am now. Well, something like that can never not change you, but I had to get out of my own way and go, who am I now, and rewrite the book on what that meant for me in the most basic sense of it all. And it was quite, yeah, Jax and I had a lot of conversations, well, we still continue to, just about what we learned and I guess the forging of our identities and the understanding of what it means to be a messy, messy human being that has some horrendous, but also like eye-opening stuff happen in your life. And it's just sometimes as I get back into another kind of sense of normality with, I don't know, work taking up a lot of my time, I forget some of that stuff, and conversations like this re-trigger me to revisit all of the learnings that I'd done and I've kind of just put in a little box and haven't really revisited lately. So I guess from my perspective, this is already been quite an enlightening conversation.
Mm. I love it that we have these conversations for people listening. And then we always walk away going, shoulders a little bit lower. Yeah. Got a couple of light bulbs there, yeah. More than a couple of gazillion. And I think there's another part too, and this happens from all through our life. It's kind of like we become different versions of ourselves, but there's this core essence of who we are that never shifts. We just become a little bit detached and disconnected from it. There's something about aging that I think just really facilitates this process. And you and I, Kate, have had a couple of conversations around Chip Conley, who, for those that haven't listened to our episode with Chip, New York Times bestselling author, disruptor in the industry, is an expert around Burning Man and all sorts of amazing, interesting, curious things, founder of the world's first midlife wisdom school, and has started this conversation around aging. Because I think, like you said before, with your bio at 53, you've got a good backstory to pull on. Again, that comes down to the work you've done, the perspective you choose, and the curiosity and lens that you look at life. And same for me. I'm excited at 56. I'm a single woman. I'm only just kind of figuring out what my groove is around working into my passion, getting comfortable turning up as me again instead of hiding it. And it's just so liberating. And I don't think I would have had that at 35. I don't think I necessarily would have got to it as quick if my world and my marriage hadn't blown up. But Chip Conley, I came across at the same time. And Chip's work around transition and midlife really resonates with me. What from his work really resonates with you? Because I know you were keen to get up there and play in the sandpit in Mexico with him.
Yeah, I think the two things that strike me, because I'm a mad fan of Chip Conley. Chip, if you're listening, you know, it's not in a creepy way, but totally.
Me too.
you know, it's okay, a little bit creepy maybe, no.
I'm the creep. That's good.
admiring you from afar. I think when we first spoke, Jax, I was saying I remember I think it was his first TED talk when he did the thing about he'd created Joie de Vivre, the boutique hotel chain, and had gone up to, because it was part of, I was in a real conscious capitalism tip at the time, however, like 15 years ago or whatever. And he had gone up to Bhutan to study gross national happiness and to look at that and saying, how can we use that as a framework for looking at the way business, what business creates, you know, an alternative rather than it just being show me the money. And so I'd become curious about him, read all of his books. And I think there's so much about the person he is and the journey that he's been on. You know, things make sense when you look back on them, even when they don't, when you're in the middle of them. Of going to Stanford with people like Seth Godin and all the rest of it, and then being a marketing dude, getting into the boutique hotel thing. Every one of those hotels has its own identity crafted around a very particular person and a need. No two of them were the same. Working his ass off at that, works himself to a place of sickness, you know, has to completely rethink his life in midlife, and comes to this place through his own midlife experience of this understanding about wisdom and the concept of eldering in our modern society and what we might call Western society. And this elder thing is something that we don't, it's a concept. Wisdom sounds a bit woo-woo, and the concept of eldering and how that might play a role in society generally, and especially in our workplaces, is something that people, I think, often struggle to get their heads around. But when we think about the way the world is going, and fantastic book I recommend to people, The 100-Year Life, if they haven't read it already, but it's about moving from a three-stage life of learning, earning, and retiring to a five-stage life where we're getting 10 to 20 extra years of midlife in the middle. And this idea of, particularly for women, I think, but it's for everyone. I'm interested in it because I'm a woman in my 50s, right? But this idea of not retiring, of why would you retire, particularly when I got here and just went, Christ, I feel really good. I mean, despite the whole menopause mess, which thanks to HRT is beginning to, where the ship is beginning to right itself. You know, getting to this place and going, coming up to 50, having a bit of a moment of like feeling the storm clouds gathering and not knowing quite why, but recognizing I had a lot of internalized ageism about what value did I have and where was I going to, you know, letting my hair go gray and everything that brought up, a whole lot of things, recognizing how deeply wired in the concept of redundancy, particularly for women past a certain age in the workplaces and actually more generally in society. And so his ideas around wisdom, you know, crystallized intelligence, which is a thing in terms of the way the brain rewires, particularly for women as a result of menopause. We go through cognitive aging different, at a different age and stage in later life than men. We get the wisdom stuff ahead of the chaps.
Yeah. Yeah. There's got to be some bonus out of going for all that, right?
Yeah, everybody gets it. It starts coming in from your 30s, actually, 30s, 40s, this move from fluid to crystallized intelligence, which is really what wisdom is. So there's so much value that people can create, and particularly with the way the world is going, the way organizations are reshaping themselves, the way the world of work, the way we work, is changing. You don't have to have a full-time job and then retire. It's bad for your health. You're going to die if you do that these days. There's lots of data around it. So this idea, the whole conversation about, you know, it's all the Gen Zs who want all the flexibility. I'm just going to call bullshit on that and say that the world has changed. Everybody wants the same thing. And there are lots of us in our 50s, 60s and beyond who want to keep working, who want the social benefits, need the financial side of it, but don't want to work the way we were working so that people threw phones at secretaries. And yet, right up until, and in some places still, right up until COVID hit and everyone had to just work out how to make it work, that's exactly what was happening. I don't think anything much had changed. So this, I think the wisdom piece, the eldering, the value of grown-ass human beings in the workforce and society and families, that we are not ready to put out to pasture in any way, shape or form, is a very long answer to your why, Chip Conley.
That's an awesome answer, and so much stuff sparked for me in there, because we are as wise as we are curious. Right, Chip talks about that a lot when you're up there. And I think that's the differentiator between how we're aging now, is we don't sit back on a high chair expecting to spout wisdom at people, banging a walking stick, and we must be respected. We're as playful and as curious to learn from those around us that are younger as we are to share what we know. And it's this real reciprocal intergenerational thing. And I love that. Kim, what was coming up for you?
Well, when you were describing, Kate, I guess the internalized ageism and the realizations that you're having as you're going through that stage of your life, it comes back to that piece that we sort of touched on before around rediscovering ourselves or coming back to ourselves and excavating that, and that is fluid and changes over the course of our lives, and being fascinated by that, because that was something that was a blind spot or something you didn't have awareness of until you got to that point too. So I find that really interesting. And I'm going to read The 100-Year Life, this notion that there's not three phases, that there's actually potentially five, and we need to change up the way that we look at things, is fascinating to me. So, I'd love to go to the wisdom school. I don't know when I'll get the opportunity to do that, but I was endlessly fascinated by Chip Conley as well, and just the ideas that he had, because the conventional way that we've looked at, age in the workplace is just not working for us. Like, it's just, it doesn't make sense anymore. It doesn't make sense at all. It never has, probably. Yeah.
No, and when I think about, the previous generations at my age, my mum wasn't, and my dad's a bit older, and he was a lawyer, and he had said, I want to get out of it before I'm X age, or it's going to, because lawyers died at their desks, that's what happened. And he was a partner. And I think mum was 50 or 52, so when he wanted to retire, so she left the workforce, and they haven't been retired. They're the most industrious people, like never a dull moment. They're up at 5 o'clock in the morning having a coffee and going off to the bars to go for a swim every morning and things like that. And they're 82 and 75 now, nearly 83. Great role models. But, you know, she had worked. We were latchkey kids. We had working mum all the time. We went through school, et cetera, poster child for the perfect Kiwi mum. But by my age, she wasn't at work. And my grandmothers weren't at work either because you didn't. They had worked when they were younger, and then you get to a certain point and you don't. Like my dad's mum, she'd left school at 12 and got a job at 13 as a seamstress apprentice because that's what you did. And so their lives were so different in so many ways, and every generation is different, sure. But I think there's so much that's different for women like me. So I'm 53. I don't have children. That's not anything that happened for me, and I didn't want to go through the rigmarole of IVF and all the rest, but just figured that's the way it is. There are other things for me to do. To get to this point and be financially independent, feel young, you know, and be looking at it going, well, I want to live to at least 100. I'm making triple digits. There's no doubt about that. What an incredible platform I've created for myself. You know, and we are just getting started. But I literally feel like I've discovered it's not even a new level in the game of life. It's like a whole new game with different rules, and it takes a bit of getting your head around and build yourself a new avatar and, you know, that sort of stuff. But it's an incredible time to be alive, COVID included in that. It's been just a fucking mess for a whole lot of reasons. But my thing is, please don't waste the opportunity it has presented us all to decide who we want to be, how we want to live, how we want to work, how we want to lead, because we really are in a time where we get to rewrite the rule book.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about that is, so Jax and I, we had been through our experiences just prior to COVID, but then the whole world went through like a massive hand grenade not long after. And so whether it's a marriage, a death, a pandemic, like the shared experience, there's so much similarity within it all. And it is a real moment in time to go, hang on a second, is this what I want? And you know, we had the opportunity to sit back and do that, and hopefully others have too. But yes, like you said, we can't really squander the opportunity that we've been given, especially with the ways of working have had to change. So businesses and individuals have realized that it is an option. We can't just go, you just can't go back to 2019. It doesn't exist anymore. And so, yeah, that's a very exciting and scary and opportunist place to be. So anyone out there who's wondering what's next, it's like take the opportunity to sit with the messiness of being a human being and really deeply consider what's important to you and what this life, the remaining years, and hopefully there are many of them, mean for you. Because what's the point in just doing what we are expected to or think we need to if it doesn't fit right for us?
So true. So true. And there was something that came up for me when you were talking before, Kate, that was around synchronicity. So I want to ask you about that in a minute. But I know some people believe in synchronicity and some people think it's just luck. But from what's played out in my life for quite a while, if you join the dots backwards, I do believe synchronicity is a thing. But I saw on one of your photos that I used on our Facebook page, and it was the thought leader faculty photo with your t-shirt that says, what would Bowie do? It just really resonated with me because I've been playing around with this whole curiosity thing, and it's such a good question to ask if you find you're getting stuck again and you're getting boring. I know, what would Bowie do? Then literally a day later, a screenshot of David Bowie came up with this quote, aging is an extraordinary process whereby you become the person you should have always been. And that was a David Bowie quote. And I thought, there's some synchronicity right there. But you talked before about Chip having been hanging out with Seth Godin and amazing thought leaders and change makers. And I think what happens when we're brave enough to step into curiosity and change is people will just shine like a light for us, that little bit further on their journey. And when Kim and I started Unicorns and Hand Grenades, it was all about shining a little light and sharing a little hope for people who were on the start of a journey like we'd been through, which just happened to be the whole world, because like Kim said, we've been through ours and then COVID hit. How I came across you was one of those exact same things. It was just before my world blew up. I'd been up to see Chip. I came back. You came across my LinkedIn feed and I'm like, oh man, this woman is speaking everything I've just been forced to lean into, this language, these concepts. And I think I sent you a message on LinkedIn and you replied straight away. And it was just such a cool conversation. And your sign off on that message was, go fly your freak flag. And it just really resonated with me. So I think people in their work and conversations pop into your life for various reasons. And here we are reconnecting again so that we can bring your conversation and the way that you challenge people's thinking and your wisdom to other people. What I wanted to ask you is, what are your thoughts on synchronicity and how's it played out in your life if you connect the dots backwards?
Cue the Twilight Zone music.
Oh, that's constantly in my head. That's my tune.
yeah. And other, be there. It might be people listening to this who are too young to know what that is. Go look it up, team. Go look it up. Synchronicity, I think it's really, there's so much we don't understand. Like I said, 95% of the human genome, our DNA, we just don't know what it does. How we what we perceive in terms of the physical universe, light spectrum, etc., is just so small compared to what's actually here. I think to say that there's no such thing would be a fool's errand. To explain it, no idea. But I think there are things that we know happen, like we program our, the RAS, the reticulated activator system in the brain, which effectively acts like a Google search. You see the Bowie t-shirt, it goes into the system so that that's a filter that's put over your experience so that you're more likely to notice those signals get through, right? So there's actually some neurological stuff happening. So that's part of it. I think there's also, if you're coming at it from an intentional, curious perspective, you tend to make choices that mean you behave and act in a certain way that means you're going to create opportunities at the time that you're noticing the things. So I think I don't want to take the magic away because I'm a great believer in it's things we can't explain. Magic is anything that we can't explain.
Yeah. Totally.
But I'm one of those people who I'm a hard science, rational brain. I did all of the sciences, pure and applied maths, you name it. I did it at school and university, and psychology and all the rest of it. And I'm mad about design and music and culture. And, we have a soul. I'm a solid believer in that, as well as a mind and a brain. And they're not all the same thing. So I think there's a whole lot we can't explain, Jax. And to say there's no such thing, I mean, whatever synchronicity is, this happy accidents, is a definition of it, which I think is perfectly logical. Why wouldn't you say yes to that?
Yeah, I love it. And that's that co-creation part, isn't it? The logic, the mind plays a part, and then there's stuff we can't entirely explain that happens in another sphere. Because intuition, again, is another thing that we can dive deep into. I can't explain it logically, but I know that I have a very strong intuition. And when I ignore it, bad things happen. And you could say that's from past lived experience and how the brain works, and I guess the magic that's combined. But yeah, intuition. Talk to me about the logic around that, Kate, and then the magic that combines.
I think the intuition piece, further to your observation, there is a lot in it about remembered experience, whether it's conscious or unconscious. The other thing that we are beginning to understand more about is stuff like cellular memory and the fact we can inherit experiences and memories and at an unconscious level know about them. We also don't understand everything about how we sense, you know, how we experience things. So we might be, there might be parts of our brain, et cetera, that are getting, and it's not just the brain, like we talk about the gut and everything. Your microbiome contains more cells. We are more bugs than we are our own bodies, which seems like a weird thing. But that those the new in the neurons that are through our whole gastrointestinal tract and everything else, they have a they're a different shape and they have a different job. There are more of them here and in our heart muscle, et cetera, than there are in the brain. So the way this whole system works together, how we're sensing things, the way the gut, literally healthy gut, healthy microbiome through the basic nerve works with the brain, all of these things that have to lead us to a place of going, there's a lot that we can put on the material that we might call intuition. And then there's a whole lot of stuff that we just can't explain, and why try? Because, you know, I love close-up magic. I'm not a big, you know, like the big show, big fucking stage show magic, but I just squeal like a child if someone is doing the close-up magic, like right here with you kind of thing. Just, and I love, it turns my brain inside out that I'm going, I don't know how you did it. And I love that I don't know how you did it. And I don't want to know how you did it. So I think there's a whole lot of stuff that it's really cool to understand how this works. And then there's a whole lot of stuff that it's really cool to just have no fucking idea.
Yeah, yeah.
About how it works. I just love that. And just roll with it. It's like, it works for me. The power of intention, inspired action, commitment, fortitude. You can make magic happen with those things.
Yeah, that's a powerful mix of ingredients right there. Mm-hmm. Kim, I saw you nodding your head when Kate was talking about the stomach microbiomes, and I don't know whether that's because you were judging me on my Vogel's toast and my Dunkin' Donuts that are sitting right next to me, or your mind was just blown.
I have envy for the donuts. I was nodding because I often ask, well, what is your gut saying? And I, you know, in terms of the gut-brain connection and all of that, that's really interesting to me. But I also just really enjoyed listening and watching you speak then, Kate, because I just saw so much excitement and energy, you know, in what you're talking about and passion about it, which leads me to my next question, which is just a little, you know, out of the blue. But before we had this conversation, I was thinking about what I wanted to ask. And so the question that I have for you is, what in life is beautiful to you, and where do you find inspiration? Because I feel like when you ask that question, you learn a lot about somebody.
What do I find? Well, let's I'll just write myself a note, beautiful, and then we're looking at inspiration. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. There is so much in the world that is beautiful. And beauty is a really important thing for human beings to have in their lives. There's a really beautiful book I read last year called Beauty. It's a hard read. But it's about the place of beauty and human experience. And I think we need to seek it out, find it. You know, I love, like I said before, I love beautiful design. I love anything where I look at it and I go, a human being thought about it. It's like paintings, music, theatre, you name it. A human being, that came to a human being, that idea. You know, even the idea that we create buildings where people will go to sit and listen to people play music on instruments. That, like, all of that's man-made, and it's so, the whole thing is beautiful, right? I find love beautiful. Old dogs are beautiful. Old dogs and old people. One of my big things for beauty and peace and just awe, I think I would encourage people to seek out more experiences that give them a sense of awe and wonder. And landscapes do that for me, you know, in particular mountains, mountain majesty, places like Queenstown, Iceland. I lived in the States and Colorado for a long time up in the Rockies in a place called Telluride, and had four 14,000 foot mountains outside my front door. You know, massive mountains, lakes, trees. And I like the other thing is I really like, I like beautiful questions, and that might seem like a weird one to say, but, and I think that's part of the inspiration thing, maybe where it crosses over, is I just love a really beautiful question that has you going, oh, that's good. Oh, that's good. That's a great question. Wow. Okay. It's going to take me years to answer that question. You know, things like that. I think from an inspiration perspective, I really do find other human beings just the most incredibly inspiring bunch. Deeply frustrating creatures. But I really am. And I think the inspiration piece, again, it's I have really eclectic, wide-ranging, my dad called when I was a kid, called very Catholic taste, which means it's like universal takes in all things as opposed to the Catholic Church. Yeah, I get inspired by all kinds of things. I think if you become a one-trick pony and you only drink from one well for your inspiration, then that's, you can end up lacking a bit. I think you've just, there is sparkle and energy and ideas and inspiration and beautiful humans doing great work in so many domains. Why limit yourself to your profession or what you know? It's like deliberately seeking stuff outside you. And I'm fortunate to have that, to have a very varied diet.
Love
that. Yeah.
Well, it's like,
but I love a good book. I have to say, I love a good book and or a podcast. Well done, you guys, on putting this one together. Or anything, not so much the TED Talks, they were a bit formulaic. But I'm just constantly in awe of other human beings.
And it comes back down again, doesn't it, to that curiosity? Because what I got from what you were talking about was continue to be curious about what inspires you and what you find beautiful. Like, don't get stuck. Because this, I mean, we're designed to get stuck and be sticky and stay in our little comfort zones, and that curiosity about what inspires you is amazing. And thinking about creating a beautiful life, that takes bravery and shifts, like we talked about before. What's been the biggest thing that shifted you forward on your journey?
Either breaking down or burning things down, I think would be. I had very messy 20s. My midlife messy middle was not the first mess that I've experienced. I got what I call lost in the long grass for about 10 years. I had a high achieving, smart, good at all the things as a kid. Got put up a year at high school. And at the same time that I changed schools and started to go to school with boys for the first time in 3 years, and just couldn't, I wasn't distracted by the boys, but it was more that there was, it was just a lot of change and a lot of expectation, because I'd always been, you know, the smartest girl, the smartest, top of the class, which was not cool. And then, you know, like win the athletics cup, play musical instruments, be in the choir, all of the stuff. Like, I was a hard nerd. Or at least that was my story, I think. Other people have different rememberings of me, which is really interesting. But I got to university and wasn't in the right space at the right time. And particularly in 1987, and if anyone listening went to Otago University in the mid to late 80s, height of the Scarfy times, I spent most Friday afternoons, so I was meant to be going to a zoology lecture, but I had to walk past the Captain Cook pub, which meant you didn't get much further. So yeah, I just had a meltdown and was clinically depressed. It had actually all, and I didn't know that this is when it had started, because the research about this didn't come out until 2012. But in my last year at school, I developed meningococcal meningitis, caught bacterial meningitis, nearly died, hospitalised in a lock-up room to be kept away from the light, all the rest of it. And at the time, all they knew was that that had an impact on things, like it could impact your balance, hearing, you know, some physical things. What wasn't discovered until, so that was 1986, what wasn't discovered until 2012 was that it has a cognitive and psychological impact as well. So things like inability to focus, increased anxiety and depression, et cetera. And so the year after I had that, I went off to university on my own, as far away from home as I could manage. And I know now, with the benefit of hindsight, why that next 10 years was so bad. It wasn't just that I couldn't handle shit and I was going through my 20s. It was a follow-on effect from my brain and spinal cord being bathed for an extended period of time in a, like, serious, as the doctor said to me afterwards, "We were worried about you. It was nearly wooden box time." So that experience and the 10 years that came after it, which included a whole lot of things, meant that I had an identity crisis at 19. I didn't know who I was or what I was going to be, and nothing was going the way I was. And it took me about 10 years to put myself together, to be honest, at the same time that I looked pretty good to the outside world. I was a Meccano set that somebody had thrown on the floor and stomped on, and I was trying to work out how to screw the bits together. So I think that as a breaking down, breaking apart, having to rebuild in my 20s was, I look back now on that and go, I remember afterwards thinking, my goodness, if you haven't lost your mind, you're missing out. Because it's one of the, ultimately, with the benefit of hindsight, one of the best things that ever happened to me. And I think that's kind of part of what has prepared me, even though I wasn't expecting things, particularly thanks to perimenopause, which everyone needs to learn a lot more about, wasn't expecting this early late 40s, early 50s things to be quite the schmozzle it was, and actually put a lot of it down to COVID. But we have, further to your point, Kim, taken the opportunity to burn the house down. Jimmy Iovine, who I love, music producer, that's what he said. Sometimes you've just got to burn the house down, burn the fucker to the ground. And it's kind of coming through COVID. We've been making some really, just really taking our time to see what's emerging, pay more attention, and work out what we want to create, not just rebuild, not hold on for grim death to what we had or rebuild what we had. We're just like, wow, do we really want that? Was that working for us before? Not really. So I think that's the thing. Break down and burn it down, one way or the other. Sometimes it happens to you. Sometimes you get to decide. Either way is good.
Yeah. Thank you, Kate, for sharing that. And it makes total sense to me now, because at the beginning of our conversation, when you were talking about the guy who threw the phone and how you approached him, I was thinking, that's some wisdom right there to have at that age, at that point in time. And that makes total sense to me, because you'd had the breaking down or the burning before. So you were in this.
Yeah, I was 32 when it happened. I was I was through the other side of a lot of struggle.
Yeah.
And you know, I developed a stress-related autoimmune disorder and lost my hair. It's been 7-8 years, I think, now since I've had a patch. But a lot, you know, when you're 24 in a time before the internet, living on the other side of the world, and you're going bald, it's like, no, you know, what is this?
Yeah.
Which added stress itself. So, you know, a whole lot of things that I went through, and therapy, and, you know, learning mindfulness to handle stress and stuff like that. I wouldn't be who I am without those experiences. And there's nothing I would, honestly, I would not do it any other way.
Yeah. That's, and we're sitting in a room, a virtual room, with three women have had things burn down and break down, and all three of us sitting, I won't speak for you, Kim, you can speak for yourself in a minute, but I'm the same place. I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't be who I am now, and I wouldn't be able to do what I do for people now if not for that, Kim.
Yeah, it's the same for me, and it feels a bit hard to say that because you know what you've lost, but yeah. I also know what I've gained, and that's the dichotomy, I suppose. And yeah, it's just, there is no way that I could have imagined my life would end up, and the, you know, who I am, what is who I am now. Like, there's no way that I could have prepared myself for that. So yeah, there's no changing that either.
No, and it's different in that case of death and grief, because you don't have a choice there. So it's not that you would choose that to happen the way it happened if you had a choice, because like you say, we would never, that's a whole different thing that sits over there. What you did choose was to go through the burning that you had no choice in. And I think the thing coming out the other side that is really important that you would never change is that you went through the burning, not that you'd never change the thing that happened.
No, but the thing is, the thing that really interests me is sometimes I think how, like, it's because I was listening to David Kessler talk about grief, because he talks a lot about the stages of grief, and then there's a gratitude piece at the end, and he's like, you're not grateful for the event, but there's so much gratitude around the lessons and like the connections that I've made with people, the awe that I have every day, the fact that I don't take things for granted, and the gratitude that I had around the fact that I had wonderful parents for the time that I did. I don't think I could change things. I don't think I could go back and say, don't flick that switch, as horrendous as it was, now that I've seen what my life is now, because I was just blanked. And it was fine. Like, it was a fine life, but I was just, you know, there was a lot of safety that I was clinging on to, and there are a lot of, I guess, hard things that I didn't have to face when I was in my comfort zone. So yeah, it's hard to describe, but it is just is what it is. And there is some gratitude around the experience that I've had, and the way that I'm able to now, like, I've now subsequent to that had friends come to me who have got parents who are ill, who have suffered like unexpected grief. And I'm like, kind of like, I've only got my own experience to go from, but I feel comfortable sitting and holding this space for you and talking to you about the shit that you're going through right now. And I would never take that back, because that's what I want to be for others. And those lessons are hard learned, but
yeah,
I'm okay with that.
They are.
I think it's interesting in that lots of people go around, either they're asleep at the wheel, like they really are out to lunch. And I think that's a lot of people, partly because they're just due to the comment you made very early on, Jax, they're not providing the space, or they're afraid of what will happen if they look too hard. If they press pause and they look. Mm. And this, you know, there's that talking head song on the Stop Making Sense album about, you know, this is not my wonderful life, waking up in your 40s and going, what the fuck happened? There is light and shadow to our life experience, good days and bad days, moments, you know, stories, all the rest of it. There is no way, a lot of people spend their lives creating a cocoon of stability and perceived kind of certainty, safety and comfort. But you can't avoid grief. You can't avoid shame. You know, we're wired for it. All of these things which are scary and painful, and through which we can and do grow.
Yeah.
You know, if we can see them that way. And it's, I see this a lot in people who are, you know, the sort of leadership development I do asks a lot of people. That asks them to really to lead themselves first, and not in a kind of, oh, lead teams, lead the organization in a way, you know, might be sort of thrown around in a leadership framework or whatever. It's like, no. This is like the biggest job you've got, is actually own who you are, what you believe, how you show up in the world, and how you respond to incredibly painful circumstances, shameful circumstances, opportunities, provocations, whatever. You have to own who you are and what you're going to do with it, because you've got a shit show of trying to avoid actually having these experiences, right?
Yeah. It's an illusion, isn't it? Like we totally fool ourselves into thinking that we've got this little safety cocoon, when in actual fact we're kind of not preparing ourselves for the fall, which comes for all of us in different ways, shape or form. But you know, even through my own experience, I've found that for me, talking about it helps. For others, like, they're used to me now, but it was very awkward and uncomfortable for people, and they don't really want to go there, especially when I just needed to talk about details. And my friends are wonderful and hugely supportive, but you want to go there, but you've got to find the right people to do that with too, because people shy away from that. They don't want to see in you reflecting back to them what could be for them, and so that is difficult for them to face. Yeah.
That is 100% it. It's like you are in pain and lots of people don't want to be around it.
Yeah.
Don't want to be reminded that it can, has, will happen to them, etc. And I think, you know, this when we look, this is again this midlife piece. If you think what's going on for leaders, for human beings at that stage of life, particularly with the way the world is generally, and then where we are because of the way things happen. Like, I don't have kids, but lots of my friends still have primary school age children at the same time that they have parents who are beginning to get, you know, we as individuals might be having health struggles. You know, a number of friends have had cancer, et cetera. Luckily, most of them have made it, not all of them. Parents, you know, I've got a very good friend whose mother has rapid onset. She's in her mid-60s, very advanced dementia. You know, same time that you've got primary school age kids and you're in the peak of your career in COVID, in the economic situation, et cetera. You know, it's like if people don't understand how to be with what they're experiencing, they wind up in real struggle street. And can make some decisions which they then have to live with later that they might not, I might say they regret them, but that they might wish they had done differently, you know.
Yeah. Well, Jax, you go.
I was going to say that's a very valid point. And when you were talking before, Kate, about people going into organisations and leadership and people having to really take ownership of their shit, I was in my senior leadership role before my world blew up, and I was so adept at hiding from the universe. My mum was suffering with cancer. My husband had been diagnosed with cancer. My son was going through stuff. I was up to the gunnels. I couldn't even see straight. I was under so much pressure that I'd put myself under, avoiding creating a tiny, even inch of space or quiet. And I would have had a 10-foot-high fence up around me if you had been someone that walked in. And I think at that point in my life, and that was probably about 6 months before the universe came and gave me my car crash, and I had to deal with shit and build my way back up. I reckon if you had to come in and started this conversation, I would have probably cracked. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing, because I think we can hide from ourselves. And if we keep doing that, something's going to come along inadvertently that's way better to be proactive, I think, is the point I'm trying to get to.
But I think this is part of the thing, is people are held so tightly at the moment, particularly because of the context. There's a lot of fear about being seen. Mm. It's funny, isn't it? It's the one thing human beings, we want most. Once you experience being truly seen, truly witnessed, just for who you are without judgment, there's nothing, you know, accepted, seen and heard. Once you actually feel what that feels like that's proper intimacy, not sex stuff, but like proper intimacy and connection between two human beings, holy shit, you don't want anything else, right? But before you know how good it feels, on the way to having that level of connection, that level of vulnerability, it is fucking frightening. Mm. Because it's like, if I really get seen, they won't like what they see.
Yeah.
And then I'll be alone and I'll die. Because that's basically where everything goes. All human fears go back to, and then I die.
Yeah. Because the dinosaur gets me, or the woolly mammoth does.
We're social animals. We depend on connection with other human beings and operating in groups for survival. And if I don't fit in, it doesn't matter whether you're a teenager or you're a 50-year-old man, you've got the same fears.
And when you say that, I experienced that exact thing when I, so before we started the podcast, I wrote a blog about like basically documenting the journey that I had been with through my parents. And I remember before I shared it, I really felt freaked out because it was just my experience and how I felt about it. But I was like, it was definitely like taking off all of my clothes and like standing exposed to someone and being like, do you like this? Are you going to accept me or will I be alone and die? Like it was the same thing. And I remember feeling really frightened that maybe people would think that I was being over dramatic or I was too much information, oversharing. And then I just did it because I thought, well, fuck, what have I got to lose? And the response that I had where I was truly seen and people had said, you reflected back to me what I've experienced with my own loss and wow, and, you know, thank you for sharing this. And then otherwise, if I hadn't done that, Jax, I probably wouldn't have said yes to you to do this because I had experienced that. And in sitting in that, and part of me documenting that and journaling that and sharing those blogs was me trying to radically accept, like just accept what had happened because I couldn't change it. And so going back to your point, Kate, before about, you know, the primary age kids and the aging parents and it being at the peak of your career and actually just being in that messiness was I had to just lean into and accept the fact that this was my lot. And fairly recently I was having a conversation with a good friend who's going through some big issues with her daughter. And she said to me, and her marriage, etc. And she said to me, you know, I remember looking at you at a point when you were going through what you were going with your parents, and you just were there. You just had to accept it. So I know that I can do the same because I saw you just go, well, it is what it is, and fuck, we just got to take the next best step. And she said, you know, what I'm going through now and seeing you do that makes me know that I'm going to be okay and that we will just take this one step at a time. And I was like, that's why I'm doing anything. Like, that's why I'm having these conversations. That's what I'm doing, what I'm doing, because sometimes we have to light the way for others and we can't change it. So we have to somehow, you know, find the way just to be with it. And yeah, I mean, that's led to some really, really awesome connections and conversations since then.
Well, I mean, what you're talking about there is leadership. Mm. You know, David White, poet, philosopher, who I'm a mad fan of, he says leadership is the willingness to be visible in the world. And I firmly believe that it's you were prepared to be seen, to be visible, to share your experience and risk, these perceived risks. There's risk in everything. There's risk everywhere, you know. But we feel like there's more weight on it. And so what you're doing is you're being, you know, I have a frame for thinking about leadership as path making. Particularly in the new world, the way the landscape's changed, there are no roads, there aren't the maps are worthless. Now we have to become explorers and path makers again. And you were demonstrating, you are creating a path for others to follow you down, you know, like you said, being the light for others. We can all be that. This is the difference for me between leadership and management, and it's got nothing to do with the org chart. People can lead from anywhere in all areas of their lives. We're all called to leadership in some way. And I think it's really important that people wake up to that, follow the inspiration. You know, you had whatever the reason was that you decided you wanted to write that thing, whether it's catharsis, whether it's just I need to write the shit down and get it out of my head, whether it's it might help someone. It doesn't have to be a noble reason necessarily, but just the act of making yourself and that experience and your thoughts or your beliefs or whatever visible means that you are prepared to be seen and you are prepared to lead others somewhere, somehow, even if you don't necessarily you don't go in with that intention.
Mm.
That's a beautiful way of looking at leadership. I really like that. And that vulnerability piece that you talked about before, that I didn't realize, because I thought, because my passion was helping people and developing people. And even in my senior role that wasn't connected that to that, I would be the one that would create the space for people to be vulnerable in.
Mm.
Yet I wouldn't be vulnerable in any way, shape or form. And I've suddenly after 3 years of work, come to realize that actually that's almost like passing judgment. It's almost like going, you're safe to let yourself show with me and I will embrace that and embrace you, but I'm not going to show myself to you. It's kind of like, well, you can accept help, but I'm not going to get help. You can be vulnerable, but I'm not going there. And it's this little bit of a catch-22 when it's your Achilles heel is what I've discovered.
Yeah, well, and the limitations that you're putting on your capacity to support others by not being prepared to step into that space yourself.
You can't.
You're going through the motions. Going through the motions. And look, for a lot of people, that's enough. Because it's just like, I mean, let's face it, the number of people who can actually facilitate that, create and hold that kind of space for people to become a mess and to have created the culture within the group where it's okay for somebody to become a mess and nobody's going to say, oh, no, it's all right, they're there. No, you're fine. Don't say, you know, this. We take each other's pain away all the time. It's no, now you must allow the mess to fucking happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shit's going to get real, people. It's going to be okay. There may be tears. In fact, I pretty much guarantee it. Someone will have cried by morning tea time. But, you know, there's nothing, I always say to people, there's nothing that can happen in this room that I can't clean up.
Yeah.
So just go for it. But you can't hold space for the deep work of others if you are not doing the work yourself.
That's been my biggest gift. And that's the difference between me before my hand grenade and me now. I can truly hold that space. Mm-hmm. And I could have never done that because I'm able to share it and I'm able to show it and I'm able to tell my story. And that is just because I love doing what I do. That's the bit that enables me to do it. And I wouldn't have had that had it not been the but I'm really conscious of our time and how generous you've been with yours. I'm super keen, and I don't know if you're up for this, so we'll talk off here. I'm keen to get you back to have a conversation about menopause, perimenopause, and just we true. Those two things on their own, I would love to, I would dive into that now, but we'd have you here for another hour.
Yeah, look, really, really, really happy to. Matt, really happy to. Kim, a bit like you with the grief stuff, the perimenopause, menopause stuff is coming from my own experience. It's not something, if you'd said to me 2 years ago, that I would be on the cover of the Listener Radio New Zealand. Bloody we've got the LinkedIn group is now the largest and most active group of its kind on LinkedIn globally. If you'd said to me, like even a year ago, actually, that I would do that, I would have been like, nah. And it was all an experiment. It was all an experiment because it's like, well, I think this is a crock of shit that I didn't know what was going on. Anyone else feel that way? Let's do something about it. So, yeah, very happy to come back and have a chat about those things with you.
Hey, because it is a crock of shit that no one talks about that stuff. And the LinkedIn group, what's it called and how can people hook in?
Yeah, so that they can come and educate themselves a little bit before we might get together again. It's called the Menopause Awareness and Action Community.
Yep.
On LinkedIn, and they can just request to join, and I will say yes and send them a little message that says, hey, do these things to make sure you're in the right place. And then if you still think you're in the right place, keep hanging out. But yeah, it's great. It's great. It's very exciting.
It's the worst kept secret ever. I don't know. Kim and I, we've probably not had this discussion. I've got girlfriends that even only in the last 2 years we've started to have the discussion because I didn't even realise what was going on until I came popping out like a cork in the ocean the other side. And why were we not right as women?
Oh, no, it's we really can't get started, or I'll build up or I will build up a head of steam remarkably quickly about this. So they, in the interest.
That won't be the heat rising from the flush. It'll be the steam from the inspired passion.
It's right. The steam from my ears.
Okay, yeah. People, we're gonna park this part of the conversation, and yay, Kate will come back and talk to us about this next time, so she can really let the steam pop out. So a final question I would love to round up on is, and I'm sure you've been asked this one a lot, Chip asked it up at the Wisdom School, and I hadn't thought about it, and it was actually quite helpful. So we do a lot of looking at what we want to do in the future, and we do a lot of looking back. If you were to think of Kate in 10 years' time, understanding what excites you and what you want to achieve now, Kate in 10 years' time is standing right in front of you. What do you think she's telling you? What wisdom is she sharing from that place she's arrived at?
I think about this stuff a lot. I live in the future. I don't live in the past.
share the wisdom.
Yeah, I have a 25-year plan. It's in 10 years, she's 63. She's in better shape than I am now. And that doesn't mean, you know, hot bod. That just means healthy.
Yeah.
Well, it might mean hot body, but I'm not putting that aside. I'm just going to say it.
Logic and magic. Remember, Kate, logic and magic combined.
Logic and magic, man. Logic and magic. What would she be saying to me? She would say, have the courage of your conviction. And you're doing the right stuff. You're doing the right stuff. Believe in yourself. Oh, I feel a bit emotional about this just because I had been going through a real, you know, chrysalis experience in the last 2 years. But she would definitely be saying to me, you know, like in a deep knowing level, what you're here to do. Don't get caught up in the how. Say yes to the things that are a hell yes, and don't get distracted by the stuff that you feel you should do, because everyone wants Kate on their team. I had someone say that to me years and years and years ago. Be careful, because everyone's going to want Kate on their team. And I think setting ego aside, a bit of ego death is really good for us. So that's something that's happened, which is great. So she would be very proud of me. And she would be, grateful, as I am to my past selves. I regularly have a conversation with my husband / business partner about how grateful I am to my past self, his past self, our past selves, about the choices we've made, the decisions we've made, the risks we've taken, because we wouldn't be who we are and where we are without them. And it's been a wild ride. And I'm fully buckled in and ready for the next bit.
That's exciting. She sounds like one very wise woman who's actually telling you to back Team Kate.
Oh, hell yeah. She's like, man, the life we have created over the past 10 years is amazing. I can't wait for you to get here.
With the body to match. That's awesome. That really lights up my night. I love it. Thank you so much, Kate, for just your openness and sharing. I've learned so much through the conversation, and it's left me really energized. And I know our listeners will really appreciate how you can articulate stuff in a way that just hits straight to the guts and speaks to the emotion, because I know that's what it's done for me. And Kim, in closing, what are you taking away?
Thank you, Kate. I feel really lit up after our conversation, and there's a lot. I've written a lot of notes because that's just what I do. I'm a note writer, but one of the things I've written in the middle of my page really big is awe. And I think I'm going to keep challenging myself in a way that asks the question, have I felt awe today? And if not, how do I do that? Like, am I actually really seeing what's around me, and how can I be aware of it and grateful for it? So Among many things, thank you for that reminder. I have truly enjoyed our conversation tonight, and I very much look forward to the next one because I feel like there's a lot that I need to learn from that one.
yeah, there is.
Don't start it. Kim, she said don't start her off.
No, next time, but I'm looking forward to that too. Yeah.
Calm your farm. You've got a while to go. It'll be fine, Kim. We'll get to the conversation before all the weird shit starts happening, I promise. Yeah. And you got me on hot dial if the weird shit starts happening, so real good. How can people contact you, Kate?
Best way is probably LinkedIn. Yeah. If they are interested in it, it's just Kate Billing, B-I-L-L-I-N-G. If they're interested, they can look at blacksmith.co.nz in terms of our current leadership practice. And there's a new business coming before the end of the year. So if they're following me on LinkedIn, they'll find out about that.
Yeah, I'm super excited to see how that happens too. Crafty future Kate's got that on the plan. She's nailed that by the end of the year. Okay, team, hope you've enjoyed listening. We certainly have enjoyed the ride with Kate, and we look forward to hanging with you in the next episode of Unicorns and Hand Grenades, and we will stick all of Kate's contact details in the show notes.